When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hosting the So Money podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money members club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with tap to pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone. So Money episode 1126, Heather Cabot, author of the award-winning book, The New Chardonnay, The Unlikely Story of How Marijuana Went Mainstream.
You're listening to So Money with award-winning money guru Farnoosh Torabi. Each day, get a 30-minute dose of financial inspiration from the world's top business minds, authors, influencers, and from Farnoosh herself. Looking for ways to save on gas or double your double coupons? Sorry, you're in the wrong place. Seeking profound ways to live a richer, happier life? Welcome to So Money.
Once I started to meet some of the people who were behind that and to learn their stories and really kind of the crazy risks that they took to get into this industry, I thought, wow, this is a really juicy story. I want to learn more and potentially write a book about it.
The story of how marijuana went mainstream is one about business, race, politics, and a culture in transition. Welcome to So Money, everybody. I'm your host, Farnoosh Torabi. We're exploring the world of pot today, something that I didn't really think we would do at this point in 2020, but here we are. I've found an incredible guest, Heather Cabot, who is the author of the new book, The New Chardonnay, an unlikely story of how marijuana went mainstream. Heather is an award-winning journalist, former ABC News correspondent, and anchor. Her book, The New Chardonnay, has been named a Good Morning America must read and has earned praise from Publishers Weekly, Booklist, and Katie Couric for its deep reporting and entertaining storytelling. Heather takes us behind the scenes to this massive industry, from Snoop Dogg to Martha Stewart to suburbia, how this unlikely drug became widely accepted and legal in many states. Here's Heather Cabot. Heather Cabot, welcome to So Money.
Thank you so much. It's great to be here.
The New Chardonnay. That is your new book, The Unlikely Story of How Marijuana Went Mainstream. I'm in New Jersey, Heather, and we just legalized marijuana here. I'm not a marijuana user, but I'm now thinking I might try it because I can, and I hear so many benefits. Unlike what I grew up with, the message was don't do drugs, and marijuana was sort of like the gateway drug. What changed bringing us to your book? What was the pivot? Because now everybody from Martha Stewart to moms at pickup line at the school are talking of marijuana.
Well, First of all, I just want to say I'm in the same boat. You know, I'm not a consumer myself. I grew up in the Just Say No generation. And really, the inspiration for this book was that I was looking around in 2017 and noticing the things that you're talking about. Everybody from Oprah magazine featuring THC-infused tea parties to Gwyneth Paltrow talking about cannabis at her Goop conference. And I just couldn't believe it. And then when I found out that there were some women in my network and women who I had interviewed for my first book, Geek Girl Rising, who were starting to make their own investments in these companies, that really floored me because I thought, why would they be investing in something federally illegal? So, of course, I started working the phones and learned that there was this business that was really exploding in the rest of the country that I really knew nothing about. And once I started to meet some of the people who were behind that and to learn their stories and really kind of the crazy risks that they took to get into this industry, I thought, wow, this is a really juicy story. I want to learn more and potentially write a book about it. But to your question, I mean, I think there are a confluence of factors that have played out. I mean, number one, I think when Colorado and Washington became the first two states to legalize recreational use in 2012, it really created this opportunity for people to see that you could actually make real money doing this. Mm-hmm. And in an environment that was heavily regulated, very much, you know, taxed by the state, these were businesses that were generating, you know, ultimately millions of dollars in tax revenue for states, creating lots of jobs. So I think right there, that opportunity really changed a lot of people's minds. And then, of course, you have right around the same time, you started to see mainstream media start to pay attention to the potential therapeutic benefits in a very serious way around medical applications of cannabis. And in the book, I talk about this kind of watershed moment in the summer of 2013 when CNN aired a documentary that was hosted by Dr. Sanjay Gupta. And actually, so many of the characters in the book talk about this. They remember watching the documentary, which featured the little girl in Colorado, Charlotte Figge, who unfortunately recently passed away, who was helped by what ultimately would be called Charlotte's Web, which was a high CBD strain of cannabis that was able to mitigate her very serious seizures. And this documentary really explained that. And at the end, Dr. Gupta came on the set and apologized and basically said that, you know, he, like so many others in the medical community, had really dismissed the potential efficacy of cannabis and cannabinoids, the phytochemicals in the plant. And you know, essentially said that this needs to have a more serious look. And so you had that, you had big business all coming around at the same time, and then a number of things happening in terms of, you know, the political landscape shifting. And so that's brought us to this point, which is just amazing to me, again, given, you know, that I grew up in the 80s, that 60% of Americans now endorse marijuana legalization. That's a statistic that just came out last week from Gallup, and it is the highest level of acceptance that since Gallup started tracking attitudes about marijuana since 1969.
Comparatively, is there something else in our history that compares to the flip, the societal flip that we did on marijuana, the rebranding, the now like widely accepted drug that was once positioned as, you know, a loser, like what, I don't even know. Like basically I was told to never take it as a kid. It, like to Sanjay Gupta's point, you know, it was for stoners,
right?
It's a stoner's drug. Is there anything like this that has happened in our history?
Well, I mean, I think alcohol is probably the closest. Mm-hmm. And actually in the book, I talk about how, and I didn't know this until I started researching this, but in Colorado, one of the main arguments that ultimately convinced voters to pass legalization in Colorado was that activists started making the case that weed essentially was safer than alcohol in terms of the effects on society. And people really bought into that and ultimately voted for Proposition 64. But when you look back at, you know, at alcohol prohibition, and I also thought this was really interesting, you know, even during prohibition, during those years, people were still able to get prescriptions for alcohol to treat certain ailments. And I learned, there's this, now I'm going to forget the name of the book, but there's a wonderful book about prohibition. It sort of is I'm going to look for the title. Oh, it's called Last Call, and it's by Daniel Ockren. And it's a famous book. It was actually made into a Ken Burns documentary, but he talks about how Walgreens, the drugstore chain, became such a huge brand and huge business because it was one of the pharmacies that actually wrote prescriptions for alcohol during prohibition. Mm-hmm. So cannabis actually follows some of that, right? You know, it sort of, it evolves out of this, you know, sort of medical, medical applications and this idea that, well, you know, maybe it isn't bad for you. of course, we now know, you know, that alcohol, obviously, I mean, you could go down the list of how bad alcohol is for you. And we are, that's the other thing that's happening too, is we're starting to see younger generations move away from drinking. And that's why you're seeing companies like Constellation Brands, for example, which is the maker of Corona Beer and Svedka Vodka and Mondavi Wines. They made a huge investment in Canopy Growth, which is actually one of the stories that I talk about in the book. Canopy Growth would go on to become one of the large, the first publicly traded cannabis company in the world, and still one of the largest. And Constellation made a huge bet in Canopy several years ago, because they were hoping that they would be able to create these THC and CBD infused beverages, which, by the way, will be hitting the market this summer. So it's very, it's interesting how both of those things sort of intersect. But yeah, to your question, I mean, I think alcohol would probably be the closest thing that I can think of off the top of my head.
I'll tell you why I voted for the legalization of marijuana in New Jersey recently, Heather. And it had, of course, a lot to do with the science now saying so much about the benefits, the medical benefits. And I also didn't want to see more Black men go to jail for this, which is a big reason we have a overpopulation of Black men in the prison system. And so did that come up in your reporting at all? You know, the implications that legalizing marijuana would have on racial justice?
Absolutely. I mean, that's a major theme that I address in the book. And it actually was one of the things that also drew me to this topic, because I've just always been someone who is interested in social justice. I think one of the things that the new Chardonnay really exposes for people is that this industry, despite the fact that Brown and Black people have been disproportionately targeted by the war on cannabis in this country, and as you referenced, you know, they are, you know, filling up and have filled up our prisons on these low level drug charges. Despite that fact, those communities are not necessarily benefiting from the green rush. And what I talk about in the book is how, you know, the way this industry has evolved, mostly because it is still federally illegal, which creates this conundrum, you know, between this conflict between the state and the federal government. It's really cut out a lot of people who did not have their own personal resources to get into this business early. So overwhelmingly, when you look at the people who are helming the largest multi-state operators in the U.S. right now, they are run by white wealthy men. That is something that people are talking about now. I certainly in New Jersey, that was a sticking point, you know, creating social equity, figuring out a way to make sure that not only that these communities benefit directly in terms of economic development, but also the fact that Black and Brown founders actually get a chance to become owners of these businesses. Mm-hmm. And what we've seen is that hasn't happened, even though some states have really tried to put some of those programs in place. They haven't been really successful yet. And for a variety of reasons, but one of the biggest reasons is because cannabis is still federally illegal, you can't get a small business loan. And most institutional investors are on the sidelines, so you can't get a loan. And so unless you're somebody that has really deep pockets, or you have a lot of rich friends, or, you know, a rich uncle, you're not going to be one of those people that is going to be able to, certainly in the early days, you were not one of those people that could compete to apply for a cultivation license, for example, where you could be spending $1 million just to be in the game. And I go into that in the book through these characters. So I should say I'm getting very wonky here, but the book is very much focused on four really compelling characters. And I go into all of this through their stories. So yes, I agree with you. You know, certainly looking at the racial injustices of the drug war, I think has been an incredible impetus for people to vote for legalization. It's going to be very interesting to see how the states deal with that. And another piece of that is the fact that in some places where they've legalized, the states didn't put in provisions to pardon people or expunge people's records. So you have legalization in place and people able to start these businesses and people able to, you know, legally purchase cannabis while you still have other people that still have felonies on their records. That's a real problem. So I think certainly in New Jersey, that's something that as the legislature grapples with how to roll out this program, that's going to be something to pay attention to.
You interviewed Snoop Dogg for this book, right?
Well, not really. I interviewed Ted Chiang and a lot of his, I spent a lot of time with his entourage.
Well, how was it hanging out with his entourage?
Well, I think actually, you know, it's better to describe them. I'm realizing I really shouldn't describe them as entourage. I mean, they are his entourage, but more importantly, the person that I spent the most time with and who's a main character in the book is Ted Chiang, who is Snoop's business partner and his longtime manager. And he is really the mastermind behind Snoop's cannabis investments. And a lot of people sort of think, you know, if Snoop is just being synonymous with being a stoner. But what many people don't know, and the story that I wanted to tell in the new Chardonnay, was that he and his team were incredibly early in terms of seeing the opportunities of the industry beyond just the idea of growing the plant. They invested very early on in technology, for example. They realized that if this was going to be a legitimate industry, that you needed to have all of these picks and shovels to support it. So he and Ted Chiang founded one of the very first venture capital funds to invest in, as I said, software, different types of testing technology, packaging, you know, all the sort of unsexy stuff that makes a business. And these guys were doing this, you know, very early on. I mean, they first came up with the idea in around 2013, and they ultimately founded the firm formally in 2015. But they've continued to make very, very early and successful bets on some of the most innovative companies that support the industry. And I just thought that was a story that most people would never understand or even think about, just because on the surface, you wouldn't expect that. And Ted, for his part, you know, is this Wharton-trained entrepreneur and investor who is, you know, not what you would expect as sort of Snoop's right-hand man. And through Ted, I was able to meet so many of the people in Snoop's orbit who have really helped him not only think about his cannabis investments, but also how to leverage his brand into the cannabis space in the U.S. and also in Canada.
How would you like to look 5 years younger? In a clinical study, people that had volume added with Juvederm Voluma XC in the cheeks perceived themselves as looking 5 years younger at 6 months after treatment. Look younger, feel like you. Add volume for lift and contour in the cheeks with Juvederm Voluma XC. Reverse signs of aging by adding volume to smooth laugh lines with Juvederm Volure XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
You want to know what's worse than shopping for jeans? Shopping for bras.
It's never been fun for me until Third Love came into my life. Third Love was launched to take all the frustration, ick, and ugh out of bra shopping. They make solutions for every bra problem, aka problems. Their bras make it easy to bring back perkiness you haven't seen probably since high school and have straps that actually stay put. Third Love's bras are designed at their headquarters in San Francisco, and they're made from premium materials. They put every style through hours of wear testing on real women, including themselves, before they're given the stamp of approval. And whether you're a double A or an H cup, their virtual fitting room can help find your perfect fit fast. They even invented half cups, so long feeling stuck between two cup sizes that just don't fit. It's time to get your problems solved. Visit thirdlove.com and get $15 off your order with the code podcast15. That's thirdlove.com to get $15 off your order with the code podcast15. Let's talk about money, Heather. When we were talking about bringing you on the show, you were very candid and you said that you mentioned that you celebrated a big birthday this year, 2020, turning 50. Congratulations.
Thank you.
But that only recently you felt like you came to terms with your money and you kind of felt like you finally mastered your money. And so tell us about that journey and what was the turning point for you?
Well, I think it was funny. We were just having this conversation with our kids the other night, and I just got my kids are freshmen in high school. I have boy girl twins, and we just set them up with their own debit cards, and we have been teaching them about investing, and we have been. Both of them are really interested in investing now. And I was telling them the other night that no one ever talked to me about investing. I didn't understand. I didn't even really know what compound interest was until I was probably in my 20s. And my parents are both very well educated, but I think some of it was the times. I think that I'm a woman. I just think that it wasn't something that I think was thought of as polite, and money in general was something that we didn't have conversations about. My parents, have been very successful. They were definitely, they had me when they were really young. So I definitely remember the years. You know, we didn't have a lot, but it wasn't a topic that we talked about. And I was even telling my kids, like, I don't even think that I started contributing to my 401k until I was probably in my late 20s. I didn't even think about it. And I was working in these, you know, sort of entry-level reporting jobs, TV reporting jobs. And I wasn't really saving. And I was just kind of thinking, oh, that's something I'll do later. And it didn't really occur to me that what I was saving then would ultimately multiply so much. And we were discussing this with the kids now that they have their bank accounts about, and, you know, are they going to, do they want to put some of it into actually investing versus we were talking about interest rates in savings accounts. And they're just, their grasp of money is so much more advanced than mine was, certainly in high school. And I just think there are so many things that maybe I would have done differently. But I think a big part of it does play around gender. And I did not realize until I mentioned this to you, that I was very fortunate to participate in the Pipeline Angels training program, which is a program to help women learn how to invest in early stage startups. And because I wasn't really somebody that ever really talked about wealth building, I mean, I just didn't think it was polite conversation. It was really interesting to suddenly be in a situation where that's what we were talking about. There I was, I think I was like in my mid 40s. That was the first time that I was really getting this very kind of rudimentary introduction to investing and understanding a whole world that I didn't even know existed before. I wish I'd come to it much earlier in my life, but my husband and I are trying really hard to educate our kids now so they can think differently about their money and also just be comfortable talking about it.
It sounds so basic, but we don't often, and I don't think it, I think it is generational, but I think unfortunately a lot of the generational traditions repeat. And we're seeing a lot of that show up even in the millennials' lives, where they're deferring financial management to their spouses. They're not, you know, negotiating for themselves. They're not investing. All of that is repeating because history does repeat. You have to learn it It doesn't just happen just because we're living in modern times. You mentioned, you know, what you wish you had known or did. I'm curious because I'm 10 years behind and I'm looking at my 40s as really an opportunity, the decade to fine tune, accelerate some of my investments, just to put more toward, now that I know, you know, that I like retirement isn't that far away. Like I gotta really get certain things in motion or more in motion. And I'm really set on trying to retire by 60, if not sooner. That's aggressive, but like, what does that look like? And I'm manipulating all the calculators. But what would you have told yourself at 40, financial advice?
Ooh, oh my goodness. My family would laugh. They were asking me for my financial advice. But I think, first of all, I mean, this is what you do for a living. So you feel confident in, you know, even speaking the language of finance. I mean, I think for me, that was like, and the fact that the fact that I'm writing about business now,
yeah.
My family is like, my mother actually said to me after she read the new Chardonnay, she said, I was really impressed about you, you know, your mastery of, you know, how you were explaining venture capital. I think the big thing is, you know, and this is, I don't think it's just for when you're 40. I think it's in general. I just think it's this idea of paying yourself first. I think that's such an important concept, especially as you get into your 40s and you have just more things that you want to do. You probably have more financial freedom in your 40s too. And I think just kind of always going back to those goals, I think it's important to not get yourself too emotional about what's happening in the markets. I mean, right now it's easy to just like every single day follow what's happening because we're just living in such a crazy time right now. I think you have to kind of look at the long term, and that's more for mental health too. If you're doing all the things that you need to do, obviously diversifying your portfolio. And following the news, you know, I'm married to somebody who's a former 60 Minutes producer, and both of us are reporters. And, you know, I love the way my husband kind of thinks about all of this too, because he really sees the intersection of what's happening in the world to what's happening in the markets. And I mean, that's just the way he thinks about it. And that's the way I think about it too. And that we're trying to help our kids think about it that way too. You can't sort of divorce the two. It's all the same thing. Everything is interrelated these days. So I think it's really important to kind of, you know, take that kind of global view, but not get so emotional about it that you're worried. Because I feel like right now, I would guess a lot of the people you're talking to right now also, and there's just so much uncertainty in the world right now.
Mm-hmm. Well, I really appreciate the reminder to pay yourself first, not to be confused with buy yourself stuff first, mm-hmm. which I tended to do a lot in my 20s and even last night. It's really hard to not only put away money for yourself intentionally, and I speak to a lot of entrepreneurs who are listening who, you know, it's one thing to get paid consistently a paycheck, but it's another to get lump sum payments every 6 weeks or every 4 months or whatever your cadence is in your business. And you finally get that money and you have all these bills to pay. So it's hard to kind of very consciously say, okay, I'm taking 10% or 15% and putting it away, but then to not spend it is the other challenge. It's not fun to just save, you know, but I'm telling everybody now as a 40-year-old going on 41 that no one arrives at any stage in life, 40, 50, 60, and says, gosh, you know, I just saved too much money.
Right.
I don't think that's ever been said out loud.
I think that's true. And I would just add to when you talk about things, one of our big philosophies in our family, by the way, I mean, my husband and I are about to celebrate 20 years married. So you know, we've known each other a long time, and this has definitely been an evolution. But the other thing that our spending, I think we try to really keep it in line with our values. And so as an example, we tend to, when we do spend money, we spend it on experiences. Mm-hmm. So like we took our kids last year to Vietnam and Cambodia on this amazing trip. And we went to go see Angkor Wat, and it was an amazing trip. And so when we do spend money, we really think about it in terms of like, how are we creating memories as opposed to kind of like stuff. I feel so fortunate that we can even have those kinds of experiences. And I really hope someday we'll be able to get back to them too, you know, in this post-pandemic world. But travel and family vacations, Seeing, you know, our extended family, to me, that means more than anything. And I think our kids feel that way too. So I think that's also important too, as you think about saving and spending, you know, what are you really spending it on and where are you going to get the most joy? Mm-hmm. I think for us, that's something that we're really on the same page about.
Congrats on 20 years. And absolutely. It reminds me of advice that a guest gave me on this show, Bill Perkins, who wrote the great book, Die with Zero. It's all about how to make the most of your financial life in your living years, as opposed to just saving for the sake of saving to die with an inheritance that you'll never see really enjoyed. Mm-hmm. But he says to build up your memory bank. You know, that your bank of memories is something that can never be too high. And it's the sort of thing that once the memory bank is filled with a memory, you can always go back to that memory. It's like this gift that keeps on giving. It's that, enjoying and going down memory lane and recounting those memories with your loved ones. It's this like ongoing asset that never diminishes.
Now, and especially now, right? When we can't travel and we can't see our family. I mean, we talk about it all the time and how lucky we were that we went on the trip, or even the fact that we had, so I'm Jewish and my husband is Hindu, and we decided to have a B'nai mitzvah for our twins and a Jenya, which is a coming of age ceremony in his faith. And we weren't going to do a big thing. And we were like, well, why not? Let's just do it. And, you know, his family came, my family came, and it was the year before the pandemic. It was the spring of 2019. And we have those memories now. Mm-hmm. We brought our whole family, we brought our family together from all over the country. And that was a really special thing. So I agree. I think those memories, I mean, I'm leaning on those memories right now. I'm so sad that we're not going to be able to be with our family for Thanksgiving. So I fully agree with that. And then the only other point I would add, of course, is philanthropy and giving back and making sure that, you know, while you're budgeting for everything else, that you can, no matter what is meaningful to you, but that you can feel like you're contributing to causes and people in need. And I mean, you know, there's real joy in that. And, you know, I think it's often been said, but I really think it's true that, you know, the person who's actually making the gift gets more out of it than the person that's receiving it. I think it's really true.
Yeah, there was a Harvard study that said even just spending $5 on someone else for the good of somebody else, maybe it's you get your friend a cup of coffee, or maybe not now, but you send them a $5 gift card to Starbucks or whatever, or a local coffee shop, it actually makes you happier. So that saying that money doesn't make you happy, or more money doesn't make you happier, it's not that true. Because if money is spent right on experiences, on helping other people, it definitely does elevate your sense of fulfillment in life. So if for no other reason.
And I'm all about karma, you know, and just putting good out into the world. And, you know, and like I said earlier, I mean, like, or maybe I didn't say, but, you know, I really was kind of the least likely person to write about the marijuana industry and marijuana in general. Like people are like, I barely even like drink, and people are like, but on the other hand though, I think I was kind of the right person to come in as a voyeur and look under the hood and see what was happening, because I do come at it with trying to put good into the world. I mean, I felt like this was a story that needed to be told for a variety of reasons. And we talked about the social justice piece of it. I think that is so important. I think people don't necessarily realize that there are people who really should be benefiting from this industry who are being left out. And that was something I really wanted to address in the new Chardonnay, along with everything else and, you know, sort of the juicy storytelling. But I felt like that was an important thing for me to put that out in the world, and, you know, to spend more than 3 years getting my arms around cannabis. There had to be something there that was giving me passion about it. And it was, a lot of it was that. And also the fact that I am always very inspired by entrepreneurs, frankly, and the risks that they take and the reasons that they do what they do, because particularly in this industry, I mean, they're putting it all on the line. And so I find that really fascinating. And also just, I think it's motivating too, even if you don't care about cannabis at all. I just think that journey of the entrepreneur.
Yeah, because really, and I have not read the whole book yet, but it is about cannabis. But really what you are unveiling is the narratives behind things like business and race and social norms and history. You know, it's fascinating. I think it's very encouraging to know that something as what seemed so fixed and set, right? Like you're just, it was branded. Good kids don't do drugs, and cannabis was like the gateway drug and had this cloud over it, that things can change. And, you know, humans can change. And thanks to things like science, the story's not over.
Agreed. And I also think it's a great lesson for all of us to remember that we should always ask questions and always challenge the narrative, challenge the things that we've been told, try to understand why have we been told things, you know, why were those messages given to us at that time? And what was the impact of that? And I think that more than anything really drew me to this. Everything that I thought I knew about this was the complete opposite from people, from the businesses that were being started, the motivations for people getting into this industry, even the people who use cannabis. It was so, I always talk about it as this Alice in Wonderland moment. Mm-hmm. And it really was. And that's really humbling. And I think as a reporter, but also as a human being, to realize that how important it is to not take things for granted that we're told, and to look underneath the surface and understand what's really going on. So I hope that people who read the book will be entertained, and you know, it certainly is a fun read with lots of suspense. But at the same time, I hope that they'll come away with maybe a new understanding and a new perception of you know what this industry is all about and what it's becoming.
Thanks so much, Heather Cabot. The book is The New Chardonnay: The Unlikely Story of How Marijuana Went Mainstream. Thanks so much for writing this.
Thank you. And thanks for having me, and have a good Thanksgiving.
You can learn more about Heather on her website, heathercabot.com. Her book, The New Chardonnay, is available everywhere. You can also follow Heather on social media, Instagram, heather.cabot. All this info is on the So Money Podcast website. And while you're there, click on Ask Farnoosh and leave me your question for our Friday episodes. And I'd love to hear what you think of the show. If you like the show, of course, I'd love for you to subscribe and leave a review. Let me know what you're enjoying. Every Friday, I pick a reviewer to receive a free 15-minute money session. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. Happy Thanksgiving. And I hope your day is so money. Hosting the So Money Podcast for almost 10 years, I've been learning a lot about how to best serve you outside the show. I've begun to offer pop-up workshops and a So Money Members Club. And with each new line of business, a lot goes on behind every transaction. Stripe helps simplify and ease payments with Tap to Pay on iPhone, which helps me grow revenue and reach through accepting more in-person contactless payments when I'm out in real life promoting my programs. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe give me the ability to scale quickly and stay flexible with quick setup and no additional hardware required. And it's not just ideal for me. From local pop-ups to global retailers, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe help businesses of all sizes accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. Whether your customers want to use their card, Apple Pay, or other digital wallet, now you can accept contactless payments right from an iPhone. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.